freedom was always really key for me. So I knew that, okay, you can make a ton of money, but if it's not fulfilling to you, then is that really true freedom? So that was when I realized that ultimately it's about building a business that you actually love, that you're passionate about. Otherwise, people get so caught up in just doing things for all the wrong reasons.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference. 111, 110.
Street cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and we have with us today a friend of mine, and we haven't been friends for a long time, but I tap like on all her shit on Instagram. You should too when you find out where her pages are. She's got a really interesting story, a little off the beaten path of what we typically talk about, but as many of you know, that entrepreneurship is a big part of Street Cop Training. We try to do a lot to help people who are cops trying to evolve in business. And there are a lot of people who actually, dude, I had a guy not too long ago, maybe 3 months ago, was like, hey, man, called you 5 years ago, had this thing going on. You told me to leave the profession because I had this other opportunity. I'm glad that I did. Not saying that it's a bad profession. He just had an opportunity that he could not ignore. And what he had as a result of that was fantastic. So we always have crossover here. This is not just a typical cop podcast. So this is my friend. I'll tell you how we met. I was at a mastermind group event. I actually thought Lauren was part of it, but she was actually flown in to talk to everybody. I was going through my phone today. I recorded it on my phone, did a hell of a presentation. And she was one of the people there who, even though she wasn't part of the group, was nice and friendly and looking to connect. And I admire that about you. With that being said, welcome to the show. We've been trying to put this together forever, but Lauren had her fucking wisdom teeth pulled. Lauren Tickner. And she has a British accent. I told her before we started, she's the first Brit on the show. And that's it. You have the title. We're actually going to send you a plaque, like a YouTube plaque. This is first Brit on the Street Cop Podcast. So thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to get my YouTube channel to those 100,000 subscribers for like 8 years now. So if I can get a different kind of plaque, I think that's that sounds better. Yeah, that's an easier achievement for me.
Okay. Give us your bio. Tell us about your life, where you grew up, how your career progressed and what you're doing now.
So right now I'm traveling and I've been in 15 countries in the last year. And so I have an online business, fully online, remote, just like yourself. I don't have a cool office like you. That's why I'm in this like really bad background for anyone watching the video, because I don't even have a lease right now. I don't have a house. I don't own a house. All of my stuff fits into one suitcase. And the reason why is because when I first started my business, I knew that freedom was a really important value for me. So I had a period of time where I was working in corporate and I was doing asset management. After that, I quit that job, went back to university. I was only 19 at the time and was studying supposedly the UK's number one business degree, but none of my professors had ever had their own businesses. So I dropped out of that because I already had my own fitness coaching company. So I started out doing online fitness coaching and fitness training because I was just obsessed with social media. I was literally obsessed. I would go on there, post content, share fitness tips. And I grew this audience online. And they were asking me, hey, do you have like workout plans or workout programs? And I just thought, no one makes any money in the fitness industry. That's not of any interest to me. It's my passion. You should never mix your passion and your career. That's what someone told me once, which I now know is totally false. And then I realized, you know what, maybe there's something to this. So I strung together a few pieces of content that I'd written over the last few years. And I made this massive online training program. It was like hundreds of pages long. And I started selling it just from my Instagram and my YouTube channel. And it was crazy because the amount that I made in my first, I think it was my first week of launching this thing, was more than I would have made in multiple months of my actual job. And that was in asset management. And so it was crazy to me how much you can achieve, even though you don't feel ready. because I genuinely think if I was waiting until I was ready to actually do this stuff, I would still be waiting to this day. It felt so uncomfortable at the time because no one was really doing anything like that back then as well. And so nowadays, my whole focus is on helping people build online businesses that they love all around a community that they are passionate about, that they can really serve and be the expert and go-to leader for. And freedom was always really key for me. So I knew that, okay, you can make a ton of money, but if it's not fulfilling to you, then is that really true freedom? So that was when I realized that ultimately it's about building a business that you actually love, that you're passionate about. Otherwise, people get so caught up in just doing things for all the wrong reasons. So nowadays, that's my focus, is on really supporting people to build the communities that they love, business that they love, and stay in their zone of genius, whereby they're actually able to serve their community and enjoy everything that they're doing. Yeah.
That's really good. Maybe a little more direct of what you do as a business now as well. So yeah. I know that you build sales teams, you do things like that. Tell me about some of that stuff.
Yeah. So honestly, that's what they asked me to speak about. That's not actually what we do for business. So what we do for business is we have a membership for entrepreneurs who are scaling businesses based around their personal brand. So people that are making content on social media, that have blogs, podcasts, YouTube channels. The people that we have inside of our mastermind are those who are seen as one of the authorities in their industry, and they want to be the authority. So we're really all about showing them how to actually scale that membership, that community business that they have. Maybe they sell training, maybe they sell coaching programs, maybe they have an agency. So our clients are actually members inside of our mastermind. And then we do some coaching as well, but we're moving away from that business model to really scale the membership, because since we've launched it, it's honestly just gone crazy and it's way more enjoyable to me, because I just get to hit up my friends and I'm like, hey, would you come and do a training for my mastermind? And then my friends are like, hell yeah, Lauren, let's get it. And so they come in, share value. I get to learn, my community gets to learn. And now we're adding in-person events too. So that's really what we're focused on right now. We give away all of our trainings and stuff that we've built over the last 6 years on how to master social media, how to actually sell more on social media, how to build your brand, your authority, copywriting, and really dominate your online presence. That's our 100% focus.
That's very interesting. You just have my attention. I'm just soaking it all in. So like, I can't conjure up questions while I'm just listening because you're speaking to me directly. I think I'm like your ideal client. No. I think I'm your ideal client, right? I mean, we're rolling out Street Cop University now. That's exactly what we're doing. Everything you talk about is exactly what we're doing right now. And yeah, I try to remind people like, yeah, there's a big purpose behind the work that we do as a training company, because this will be global at some point. And it really dawned on me when I was in Greece, I'm like watching their cops. And I'm like, we get shitty training. I can't imagine what their training's like. It's nuts because like, it's almost like super secret shit that we have to do like behind our closed doors. Even though we're really not doing it that way, we're like helping ourselves. We're not waiting for in a public setting for some public authority to come up with some kind of solution. Because clearly, over the course of time, there hasn't been a public solution. They don't know what to do. And we do. And the crazy thing is, this is the nutty part, they are so offended that they're not part of the solution, or they couldn't come up with a solution, that they try to run interference on the solution and in turn cost people their lives. It's wild. It's wild that this world is comfortable with sending police officers and first responders into some of those significantly dangerous situations with literally zero training. It's wild. Like if I unpacked to you how much little training that everybody in this world gets in these positions, it's flabbergasting. It's ridiculous. And it can be fixed. That's why we're here, because we know you can fix it. There's plenty of money in the system. There's plenty of resources. You've allocated a ton of stuff. You're just pissing it down the toilet. That's all they keep doing. Nothing's a real solution. So we have to be thoughtful on, we stay in our lane. We know we don't have solutions for everything just yet, but we've been able to make a lot of progress here. And there's nothing more rewarding for us than to receive feedback on like, hey man, I'm alive because of you. Like I'm going to see my daughter Saturday because you guys did this thing and like, we're alive. And we get it from all over the world. It's not just here. We have a lot of Canadian followership. We have, all over. So it's a rewarding thing, and it's a big responsibility in the sense that we take it very seriously. And I have to employ business sense on the other side to ensure this thing continues to progress in the way that it does. So people don't understand. They think, oh, like our university's coming out. There's going to be a recurring subscription plan with it. And we're building that now. We're not just releasing it soon. Like we're really going to get it really nice. So when you come in, you go, holy fuck, this thing's amazing. But people, again, there'll be people who will sling mud and say, well, it's ridiculous that you're charging for this. Why would you charge for it? Because you've got to understand for us to allocate more resources to fix it, you got to be a little selfish in the beginning to do more for people. And so that's my rant right there. You triggered it. Sorry.
I love it. No, I'm super aligned with you as well. And I think one of the things regarding free content, free memberships, free education that I've seen, and at this point, we've helped more than 1,000 people build a membership, community, education, training, coaching style business, similar to what we're talking about here. And it's crazy because the stuff that you give away for free, people just don't implement it as strong as when they paid for it because they feel that sense of ownership. It's like what we were talking about before. When you have that sense of ownership and that sense of autonomy and that responsibility behind it, then you actually consume the content, you implement the content. And so I 100% agree with you. And it reminds me because, man, you say this about, you know, police in all different countries all around the world. It's the same in the healthcare too. So one of our clients, and her name is Sue, and she was a nurse for years. And then she was really good at this very specific way of doing CPR, right? She came up with like a technique to do CPR, and she would show it to some of her other nurse friends and colleagues. And then suddenly they were able to do it in a way better way, which would actually get better results and save more people's lives. And so what she did is she created a training program exactly on how to do that. And now she sells that training program to hospitals. Like she literally sells it directly to the hospital because they all have budgets for it. And what's interesting is I think that nowadays the problem is when these big government, and one of our clients actually owns a company called govshop.com. It's a massive $100 million plus business. He always tells me like what ends up happening with these government contracts is they literally last for so many years and they just don't expire. They keep going back to the same supplier that they always went to because they always went to them. And so the problem is like all of these businesses in which are needing to use and go through government agencies to get really good suppliers, they just don't have good options. So I think what you're doing is great because more people need to actually create better solutions that work. Otherwise, it's just going to continue spending money on random stuff that they don't even really know if it works, but they have a budget that they need to allocate. And if they don't spend that money and allocate the budget, then the government agency or the business, they reduce the budget of which they're allowed to spend next year.
Right.
And so that's kind of why they just sling the cash on whatever they need to sling it on, because of the fact that they have to spend it to be able to say, oh, I have a budget of blah, 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 number of million. And so that's how it all happens, just like that. And so that's why I think let's put the power back into the people that actually know what they're doing, who are really good at the training, who are really good at the education, so that the people that are the best are the ones that are able to serve the most people and are the ones that are able to build the businesses and therefore change the most lives. Because I think that when we have the people who are really, really good at what they do, who have been in the trenches and actually done the thing, rising to the top, getting the deals and actually able to scale what they're teaching out into the world, then everybody is better off. Absolutely everybody. And so it's something that I feel needs to be taken much more seriously when it comes to investing into solutions like what you're offering.
You know, there's a thing that I read recently where they did some measurements on government workers versus subcontractors who are paid by the government. And there's a 10x return on employing subcontractors versus government employees. And it's oversight. I drove in today and I said, I saw guys like cleaning up the brush on the side of the road, like, you know, essentially the foliage and the trees and the plants. And there was one guy with a weed whacker. I don't know what you guys call him in the UK. It's probably called something like a grass, some shit. I don't know. But I watched that one guy out there with a weed whacker and three guys sitting in the pickup truck on their phones.
Yeah.
Where that same money spent to a contractor, that guy's not going to allow his employees to behave that way because they're government employees and they have so many rights. That's how they're going to behave. So the subcontractor idea, what we're talking about here, it solves such a bigger issue, even though it seems like it costs more money at a much more significantly less rate than we would expect. Like, it's just wild. And people don't understand that. So, you know, that's why I agree with you. I think we're going to roll into a lot of people who are going to be the specialists. You don't have specialists at every level where they need to be to have this kind of stuff. That's it's so interesting as you're talking, because this is probably one of the most profound conversations I've ever had. Because as I think about where this is going in the future, I always go like, I wonder if there's a nurse out there who knows some technique that she can teach other nurses. I say that to myself all the fucking time. The world is a weird place, Lauren Tichenor. It is.
The way you said it, my last name is too funny. But yeah, she's amazing. If you want me to connect you to her, I can. She kills it by selling to hospitals, right? So like, that's what we helped her with, because before she didn't figure out who to sell to because the nurses didn't want to buy the stuff. I feel like with corps, they're more into career development. You know, it's really no cool with really cool skills. You know, for a corp, it's a very smart move. But for nurses, it's more of like, you do it in isolation. It's not as, you don't have as many friends that you hang around with when you're like, yeah, I just saved like 5 lives today. It's not really so much like that in nursing. And so for her, it made more sense to go B2B. But what I was just thinking as we were talking is for you. So whenever I'm going to like speak at some big event or something, I always hire security with me. And I genuinely feel like that would be a really cool avatar for you to be able to serve. Like security, private security, like bodyguard type of people. Because they have to really train. Because for example, the ones which I wouldn't say that, but they're really skilled. Like especially the ones in Dubai, but they probably don't have any of the techniques in which you're teaching. So that could be cool.
Yeah, I'm curious what their protocol is. And I got to tell you, I have seen some hired security. A lot of cops here, because you can carry a gun in this country. And as a retired police officer, we have something called HR 217, which allows you to carry a gun like everywhere, even as a retired police officer. So a lot of these guys do go into private security, but I know some of the guys that have gone to private security. I mean, they weren't like the creme de la creme. They just happen to have a gun and kind of look the part, but they're not the type of guy that I don't think I would want essentially being my security guard. These aren't, and I think there's really professional security guards. I think they really have a lot of good stuff worked out. There's this saying that I tried to explain to people here is a lot of opportunities come up, and I think about all these things all the time, and I'm so green in business that I have to eat the elephant one bite at a time, but I love it. Like, so now that thing sits in my head, the wheels start to turn. Some guy asked me yesterday, my kids go do Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So we were at the place and the guy's like, hey, what do you do for a living? Because I come in with these shirts on because I leave here and I have these shirts on. And then like people were like, everybody's intrigued about police work. So I started telling him, I'm like, you know, I run this police training company. He's like, oh man, that's so interesting, da da da. And I'm like, well, I ran a real estate. He's like, did you always do that? I'm like, I ran a real estate company and I had like a team. And he's like, I'm like, I couldn't at that time. I did not have the skills to do both. Could I do that now? Probably. So I think about the skill set that I continue to try to, you know, grow in order to take something like that right away and put it into fruition immediately. But for me now at this point in my life, I'm like, okay, where do I go with this? And that's why like I try to spend time with, and I always like feel very guilty about the guys in the mastermind group who, and you're very successful. I'm going to ask you about that stuff, but like, you know, you're there's an intimidation level when you're sitting down with somebody who you know is doing $200 million a year, right? And you're just like, but they're nice and they always want to help. But I'm always like, yo, I'm genuinely being your friend because I'm not trying to take advantage of you. Like, that's not why I'm here. And if there's anything I can do for you guys on that side, for me, I'm lucky because a lot of people like the police, even at that level. They're really big fans of the work that I do. So they're like, no, dude, like, I like your work and I want to help you because I like the reason why you're doing it. But there's a guilt associated with being like, hey, what's your thoughts on this? Even my friend Lova from Amsterdam, he texted me the other day and he's like, I haven't heard from you in a month. Please don't be bashful. I want to help you. Even like somebody like you, I'm like, you're significantly successful. So there's an intimidation thing. And I get people get that for me a little bit as well. But there's tiers of intimidation. So I don't know what the fuck point I was making on that, Lauren.
I get your point though, because I was just going to say, like, I think one of the really important things that you raised though is like everything in sequence, because I've made this mistake before where, you know, you try and do so much stuff in one go and you try and improve all these different areas, launch all these different things and try and do so much different stuff. But the thing I'm always telling myself in my mind is, if there's two priorities, which is the actual real priority?
Right.
Because there literally cannot be more than one priority. It just goes against the definition of the word. So I've always realized, and something that I'm actually personally getting coaching on right now, is being able to project like 1 year out, 3 years out, like organizing things and putting them in the calendar for then, rather than trying to do everything all at once and right away, because that's when you can really shoot yourself in the foot. Mm-hmm. And then nothing ever gets done. The team gets confused and stressed. The audience even gets confused because they're like, one moment you were launching this and now you're launching that. What is going on here? How are you actually trying to serve me? And so that's one of the problems that I've always had as someone with so many goals and so many things that I want to do, is just being able to stay focused, right? And I think that ultimately, like, as business owners, it's pretty tough because we don't have anyone telling us what to do. We're the ones that get to create our own schedule, and so we have to have a lot of self-discipline in that sense. Otherwise, the directional effort is very much going to be lacking.
It is inherently difficult, and I'm at that junction in my career where I'm probably going from elementary school to middle school. Yeah. And I found some cool college friends to hang around with who like tell me what it's going to look like for the next few years. Some of the people that I know that are doing a lot better than me are like, yeah, you're at that 5.5 year mark. This is right about where it's going to start feeling like really fucked up for you. And I'm like, yeah. Like it does. And like, you know, just hang in there. I'm getting good advice. And have you been messing around with any Alex Hormozi stuff lately?
I actually knew Alex since before he was famous, which is really funny because we both came from the fitness industry. So, I mean, he's such a great guy. Like, I remember the first time I actually met him in person, we were just at a mastermind. Like, we were in the same mastermind together. And like, he was just sat there asking his questions, like normal guy. I was always having banter with him because he was like, I was telling him, like, in the mastermind, I was telling the group, like, oh, guys, I just can't get these paid ads to convert. Like, I don't know what's working. And he turns around, he's like, you're the girl that's making 300K per month profit without any ads. Like, just be quiet. So he would have like banter about that with me, because one of the things that I think in like the online space people don't understand is when you grow your business organically without running like a ton of money on ads, like traditional like internet marketers, like his background. But yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, I was talking to Layla a couple months ago because I was having this problem with my business. And, you know, you mentioned like you kind of have that intimidation factor. Like, she's someone that I take very seriously. I'd never met her before until now. This was right after I met you, actually. And she just gave me this one line, which like changed everything for me, because she was just like, Lauren, you're trying to fit your business into a box. Like, you don't need a frigging general manager right now. You just need to do this, this, and this, and realize that your business, you don't have to try and fit it into this perfect type of organizational chart. Because I thought I needed this perfect org chart from what another coach had told me. And like, the moment she told me that, it was like super freeing, because I think it's really easy to try and force yourself into what is seen as a typical structure. But at the end of the day, as the business owner, it's what you decide that you want it to be. And then what are your skill sets and how can you build the team and the systems around that so that you can stay in your zone of genius? And she really helped me with that. But to your point, yeah, I mean, Alex is a super smart guy, and it's just funny now he's making all this content, because he used to hate making content when I first met him. And like, he was always doing ads. Like, that was always what he was doing. So it was just crazy, because I saw him one day and then the next thing he had a huge following. It's crazy how that can happen.
And I got to tell you, his content is fantastic. It's been helping me a lot lately.
Yeah. So good.
He puts good stuff out. You know, it's so funny because you said another coach had told me to do it this way. And that's another thing about like being in business for people. If you're going into this business, is like business and coaches and the way people do things, they're like diets. There's 800 different ways to do it. And so there's a lot of convolution where you're like, oh, should I do that? Wait, this guy says, don't do that. That guy says, do this. Paid ads. You know, for us, we were essentially really never spent any money on paid ads. And I don't know if you were there when I asked Gary that question. I'm like, I don't spend any money on paid ads. He's like, why not? And I'm like, that's why I'm here, dude. Like, because I am trying to figure this out piece by piece. I don't have a mentor. I'm trying to find more of them, given exchange, I always feel, but I tell like our mentors or my mentors, these people who are doing significantly better than I am. I'm like, you know, guys, just so you guys know, I also mentor 5 or 6 people who are 7 rungs down the ladder than I am. And I don't ask for money from them either. I can't deliver the value that you can to them, but they don't have access to a guy or a girl like you yet. But anything you tell me gets passed along back down the ladder to helping other people as well. So it spreads. So understand that when you give me your hour of time, we do a Zoom from the country that you're in, that is going to be spread significantly. I don't hold this stuff near and dear and keep it a secret in a lockbox somewhere. It's going to five, six people immediately.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say as well, like, I think there's also a time and a place for everything, right? Because I have a ton of different, like, I've got mentors and then I also have coaches that I pay, and it's just for different things. For example, there's some perspective in which I know if I pay someone and I'm constantly in a container of this for like a year, like one of my coaches right now who's helping me with operations and like business structuring and all this stuff, which personally is not my jam. Like, it's just, right, just not too interesting to me. But he also coaches my team, like my right-hand girl. And that's like a very specific need that I had that I sought out. And then there's also like other different people who I've hired just for a short period of time because I want to learn like one type of strategy. And I just think that's like a time and a place for everything. And I think your point is so powerful because everything that we get to learn as business owners, when we share that, I think it really comes down to the person on the receiving end realizing like they are ultimately responsible for the outcomes in which they get or don't get with the information that we share. Because one of the mistakes that I had made in the past, I believe, is I had hired someone for a specific need. And then if it didn't work, I would think, well, their system doesn't work, their strategy doesn't work. But it's not really that. It's just that I was clearly asking the wrong questions or trying to focus on the wrong thing. So now what I'm always asking myself in my mind is like, I'm looking at all the different areas of my business and I'm like, which actually is the bottleneck that I need to solve for right now? And I've been doing that for like the last 3 years now. Always, every time I'm like getting hyped about a strategy, like, okay, this paid ad strategy for YouTube ads, this looks so amazing, this looks so fun, everyone's killing it with it. I look at the different areas of my business and I'm like, okay, is lead generation a problem right now and a bottleneck in my business? No? Okay, let's pause. Let's actually go back to the real problem, which is, let's just say, lead nurturing, right? Like engaging with the leads, bringing actually the leads that we've got and phoning them up, et cetera. And so when I've started to think through that lens, it saved me a ton of time, effort, money, and also allows me to get the actual help that I need from the mentor that I'm talking to at that time. And I can ask them the better questions that will allow me to move forward, because otherwise it's just a guessing game and we're just hearing information and stories, but can we even implement it? Most of the time, not.
I think there's an insecurity when you're posing questions to somebody who might be way ahead of you. Like even this weekend when I'm going down to Puerto Rico to spend time with some of these folks, I just don't want to sound stupid. You know what I mean? Because in reality, I'm very much an artist in the sense of I'm the guy who can conjure up these visions of, oh, I think that'll work really well. But then we roll into like, we're using LearnWorlds for our online thing. And, you know, I'm sure you're probably going to correct me on a few things before I fucking move forward. You know, so I literally sat down. I'm like, let me just start working with this. And I was like, hold on, wait, what am I saying? I brought two of my media girls in. And I'm like, hey guys, this is the page development for LearnWorlds. I have no business touching this thing. And she's like, oh, it's like Wix. I'm like, I understand. I built a Wix website before. I'm like, I get it. But like, this is not what I should be doing. So I'm just going to hand it over to you guys. And like, I know you're going to make it great. They're fantastic employees. They're two of the, that's not a lot of talented people here. They're very, very talented. They're hands down some of the best people I've ever met in my life. And, you know, so I kind of stay in my lane at some sense where I'm like, all right, I'm good at this. I'm good at seeing the next vision, but there's a lot of things. I feel I'm learning 100 things all the time, nonstop. And do you feel panicked at times? Like about like, you know, you're trying to look for that unlock. You're like, what am I doing fucking wrong? Like, where you don't even like, and like, God, and sometimes it's so simple. You're just like, that was so stupid. Why didn't I do this sooner? Does that happen to you as well?
Oh my gosh. So until the last couple of years, yeah. I'll tell you why it doesn't happen to me now. So basically, I would always hire these coaches or get stuck in business or go to an event, get all these ideas and everything. And like, I would implement it and it wouldn't work, right? And I was so frustrated. Like, why the hell does this not work for me?
What's wrong with me? You can curse in this podcast. So let's go back a second.
Why the fuck is this not working?
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. You wanted to hear it in the British accent, right? It sounds more aggressive. No, but I'd be like, why the fuck is this not working? Why is this strategy not working for me? My friend is making $1.5 million a month with the exact same ads. Why is this not working for me? So then I actually stupidly looked into how we work with our clients. So I had a lead generation agency back then, and I also had a personal branding agency and personal branding courses, helping people grow their personal brand, get leads with their personal brand organically, blah, blah, blah. And so every time that we were working with them, I would literally look across the 7 key areas of the business, which is the product. So like the thing that you sell, your audience, and the awareness of what you actually sell. Does the audience know what it is that you're selling? Do they have awareness of your product? The next thing is lead generation. So how are you actually getting leads? What's your volume of leads looking like? The fourth one is nurturing and conversion of those actual leads. Like, are you doing anything to follow up with the leads, or are you just, they buy or they die? After that, it's sales. Next up, it's client loyalty. So how long do your clients stay with you? Do they refer other people to you? And then finally, after that, it's operations and team. So we would always look at these 7 areas with our clients' businesses to be able to figure out why are they not getting results. For example, I remember this one really big name. I will not say the name, but we were trying to get leads with his personal brand on LinkedIn, okay? And it was not working, and it was driving me crazy, okay? And so then we looked at the 7 areas of impact, and the reason why it wasn't working was because, first of all, no one had a goddamn clue who this guy is. He didn't have any authority yet. He was always in the background back then. So we were basically starting from scratch. So what we had to do is we had to showcase authority, show why he's legit so that people would actually listen to him, start following him. And only once we nailed that down would we be able to start doing the lead generation, the lead nurturing, the sales, making sure that people are really aware of the actual thing that they're selling. And so it was interesting. So then I started thinking, oh my God, I do this on my clients' businesses. Why am I not doing this on my own business? Mm-hmm. So then I would always go to these events like the one that you and I went to. And I always find myself in these online marketing events. So I'd be at the event, I'd have Slack open in front of me, and I'm like messaging my team, oh my gosh, this YouTube ad strategy, this Facebook ad strategy, we need to get on TikTok, we need to do YouTube, blah, blah, blah. And then I would, after the event, take the 7 areas of impact, and I would look at ranking myself on each of the different areas. Where are we at as a business right now, as a snapshot in time? And lo and behold, it has never been a problem in my business. Never. Lead generation has never been an issue. It's just not a problem for us. So I was always, just because of my interest, telling my team we need to do all this stuff that I was interested in, but it was never what the business needed. The problems that we had always had in the business would either be like operations and team, or it would be that we were not able to nurture all the leads that we had. So instead of now getting hyped up and excited about the strategies that I wanted to deploy in my business, now I know I have a simple framework to look at all the different 7 areas. If I get excited about one area in which I found out some magic strategy, I can compare it to the 7 areas of impact and say, is this actually going to move my business forward based upon what my main area of impact is right now? If not, cool. We put it down on an ideas list and we can get to it next quarter if it still makes sense. We've never done anything on that ideas list.
Wow.
Because we don't need to.
Yeah. Wow.
It's crazy.
It's just a simple fix is that we're all looking for that. So you think you've actually found relief at that time of the anxiety created that running and owning a business creates?
Dude, it was like so stressful to me because I could feel like we could never get everything done. But the problem was is that we were just trying to do the wrong things. I see this all the time in business owners who are, I would say mainly below like 3 million per year. Honestly, I see this as like a bigger problem at that level, but they do so much activity, but it is not actually going anywhere. So the business owners at that stage are usually working like 12 to 16 hours a day. They're putting in so much work, messaging so many people, posting all this stuff on social media, different strategies for different platforms. And it's like really complicated stuff, but it's not actually generating any additional revenue for them. I even see businesses stuck below 20 grand a month who are doing working way more than me, working way more than I would ever dream to work. And it's simply just because the effort is in the wrong direction. So they are moving sideways rather than moving forward. And it's okay, because I think you have to put in the hustle at some point, but wouldn't it be better to work half the amount of time to go twice as far? Yeah. But most people won't do that initial work of really analyzing where you're at right now at this moment in time, because it's not fun. It's not exciting. There's not dopamine. There's not ideas going through your mind, getting hyped up to implement. And so therefore, they stay stuck and they stay overwhelmed and they stay stressed, and the team gets burnt out. Team members leave. Clients get frustrated, empty promises. And it's this massive downward cycle, spending a ton of money on all these ads and team members that you may not need. So I have over time trained myself to be very, very cautious with anything that I do. And I take things much more slowly now, because most of the time it's not even necessary. It's kind of like it when you train in the gym and like you do an extra 5 sets of squats, but the marginal gain just isn't even there. And you're just actually like exhausting your muscle to the point where it can't even recover as quickly as possible, no matter how much protein you eat. It's kind of like that.
Hey guys, follow us on all social media platforms, to include Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Facebook group. We have so much information going on every single day, and we don't want you to miss out on any of that stuff. So check it out. Go give us a follow.
You know, essentially, those are the things that I'm learning now more than ever, is like really be able to look at like, what are we doing? What are the actions that we're taking? Some of the things that you talked about, I'm getting to that point now where I'm really prioritizing. I'm learning a lot about like attention discipline. And trying to figure out what actions that I take are the ones that are going to return the most rewards. But, you know, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of constant pressure. I am responsible for 18 full-time employees, 50 plus instructors in the field, 4 children, sole provider of a household. I also am a guardian for a disabled brother. Like, there's a lot going on where I like, it's a constant, a lot of pressure on me to ensure that what I'm doing is appropriate. Plus, I have to be a human being at times. I'm just like, I need to fucking unwind a little bit here and there. Not that I need it a lot, and I'll tell you off camera why that is. But my next question for you is, when did you know that you were different?
Well, you kind of just mentioned it just there. I had goosebumps as you were saying that, because my brother's also disabled. And so growing up, I mean, yeah. If
he's fucking weird. Like, isn't it weird that we became friends in some weird fucking way? And you know what's crazy? Yeah. You know Matt Higgins is? So Matt Higgins is, he's a guest on Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Matt, same thing. Like, all the things, like me and Matt became friends because of all the similarities in our lives. And like, we're two different parts of the world coming together on similarities. So it's so interesting that just happened.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had no idea that about you. And so to your point, every time I meet someone that has a disabled sibling, they have this like different energy about them, because you can just tell all the tough experiences that you've been through. Oof. Even just like through you saying that, I already like immediately can relate to you on like a Oof. Different level.
Oh, so
yeah, for me it was honestly that just growing up, and my brother always, he has epilepsy and autism, and so
my brother has epilepsy as well. He's not autistic. No. I don't want to go into too much of his diagnosis. I don't know if it's fair. If you saw my brother, you would know immediately that something is not right, like significantly. And he has a functionality level, but certainly behavioral disorder, no question about it. And that was something he was born with. And that was something that was very, 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 very difficult to endure, which I'm kind of thankful for, because people are just like, yo, if this building was on fire, you'd be sitting here sipping your cup of water or a cup of coffee going, relax, just go get the fire extinguisher, go get a hose outside, you'll find it around a corner. Everybody calm the fuck down.
Yeah, well, especially because he also had epilepsy. Yeah, like it's interesting how for you it came up in you always being calm, because for me, I'm the opposite. Everything makes me on edge, and I notice everything going on around me. I'd be a really good cop, you know. I notice everything going on around me because I like have a very keen eye for danger. Everything, like I can spot it from a mile away. And so my brother, yeah, he was always in a wheelchair, like growing up. And so people would always just like stare at us, right?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, he would have a seizure. And I remember one so vividly, he had a seizure in a pub where we were just having dinner, and it was actually his birthday. And the pub kicked us out. I was there with my mom and dad's family. And they kicked us out because after he has a seizure, he will start crying. And they literally kicked us out. Yeah, it was all over the news, like in the little town that we grew up.
So, my brother did the same thing. He would cry after his seizures as well.
Yeah, that's so interesting because you can't, can you talk to your brother? Does he speak? My brother does not speak really.
Yeah, yeah. So you can communicate with him, but he's a extremely emotional person and not good emotions. Like, really needs somebody and needs people in his life who are very calm, and it's very hard to find people that don't trigger him because he's a big dude and he's a dangerous dude.
Got it. That's interesting. Yeah, because like my brother, you can't speak to him. Like, he's 2 years younger than me, but his mental age is like 2 years old, 1 year old. So he's in his 20s, but to that point, I always just was used to being different. Always. I was used to it. And so now I'm just like myself always. Like I'm just always wearing like weird random clothes that I want to wear. Like I always wear barefoot shoes and like, I do whatever I want to do because I was always used to being different. And I'm just so used to that now that I literally don't care if I don't fit in with people because I just do the things that I want to do that are feeling good for me and that are fulfilling for me. And so it's such a blessing and a curse, like the way that I grew up, and you can probably relate to this because I think it's given me so much desire to make things happen. And I think seeing my brother at his birth, literally have his freedom removed from his life, has given me the desire to always live through freedom, like do everything I can to protect my freedom and to be able to make the most of my life, because seeing him not being able to do that, like he lives in a care home now, right? And my mom and my family will go and visit him all the time, like throughout the week, but it's so sad, you know, like someone just he cannot change anything no matter what. Like it's the condition of the brain, just like your brother, same thing, epilepsy, it's a brain condition, you can't do anything to change it. And so I think for a lot of my childhood I always felt quite like disappointed with life, honestly, because my friends would always go on these like fun holidays and these trips and everything, but we couldn't do that, you know? And so I would always be in the back of my mind just like, oh my gosh, if he has a seizure and hits his head, oh my gosh, like all these things running through my mind the whole time, which you can probably relate to. So yeah, that's so crazy that he's also got epilepsy. Well, yeah,
I think you and I had similar situations, maybe some of it's a little different, but I think that people don't realize that. I guess I think that we probably react differently, where you said you didn't mind being different. I never wanted to be different. I wanted my life to be very normal. And I don't have a relationship with my mother for many reasons. And it's actually one of the best things I ever did in my life. And here's some of the big rub is like, my brother wasn't sheltered from the rest of the world. He was very much in it. So you could imagine going to middle school and then like in special education in eighth grade, I'm in sixth, my brother's in eighth. And like, I didn't want people to know he's my brother. And I wasn't from a place of like I couldn't protect him. And to me, that was like the one thing that was like my like bag of like, fuck. And like, he would actually, because of his behavior, like come to like my classrooms and like look for me in school. And I mean, almost like put my head down, like, and you know, I can be honest with you. It felt like a very big burden in my life. And I'm just being honest. I'm not trying to sound like a dick.
I can relate. I can relate to you. I think over the years, I just got used to it. But I said similar things to my parents. I was always I was just dreaming to have a normal childhood. I think when you said to me, like, this is the result of not having it like a normal childhood, I literally relate to that so fucking much. And like, when you said it to me, I think I sent you a voice memo or something, but like, I seriously relate to you. Like, I didn't have the childhood and I was always dreaming like, oh, my friends get to go skiing. Like, I want to go skiing or do something with my family and have like have a nice, enjoyable trip, but we could never do that. Right. And I think it gives you, at least for me, it always gave me this drive to really do something with my life because my brother cannot. And I just saw like all these people making excuses for their life, like, oh, I'm too tired, or, oh, like, I have my job and I can't do anything else outside of that. It's like, no, you really can. You just don't want to enough. Because, like, I've seen my brother his whole frigging life not able to actually do it. And you're telling me because you hurt your ankle one day when you were walking outside, you can't go and do blah, 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 right? It's like the stories people tell themselves are absolutely ridiculous when you look at reality. And when you see how fortunate you really are for having an able and capable body and mind, oh man, it just gives you such a perspective, which I think most people won't understand unless they've had an experience like us growing up.
But it takes some time to process this after this podcast, the things that you're saying, because I'd like to see things in a different light a little bit. I still have difficulty with it. I'm 41 going on 42. I'm the father of four. Right. You know, in some sense, people would consider me to be a little bit of a success story. I don't typically see it that way. And, you know, I think one of the things that was difficult for me is, like, I also grew up with parents who weren't mentally well either. As nuts as this sounds, I was literally living in chaos. Unwell mentally father, unwell mentally mother, and a significantly, like, on the surface looked normal, and then a significantly disabled brother who were managed by these two people who had no business managing a kid like this. So you can imagine that it was a chaotic environment. And I think one of the things I'm frustrated with the most is my parents' failure to acknowledge how fucked up it was, right? Like, they made it seem like they were like, let's just acknowledge for a second that this is a fucking disaster. And it still is. And stop pretending like everything was normal. And, you know, and then there's a lot of guilt associated with it, because there's a lot of moving parts. And then what will happen to me is I'll have other family members who are not involved at all projecting their opinions on how our lives were, how they should be, what I should be doing, but they're not doing anything. And it makes me bonkers. It drives me nuts. And it's actually severed a lot of relationships in my life because of the lack of intelligence and emotional care that it takes to look at our situation. And I said to my aunt recently, maybe like 2 years ago, I said, you know, I didn't ask for this hand of cards, just so you're clear. I'm glad you're calling me and giving me input on how I should live my life and behave and the relationships that I should continue to keep. But I didn't ask for this hand of cards. I just got dealt it. So I've got to play it accordingly. And I went over the list. I go, did I want this? No. Did I want that? No. Nobody would ever want that. Did I want that? Nope. Right? But you're not living my life. You're just sitting out here once a year when you're getting dragged into it because this other person's bitching and complaining to you, and you're going to call me like you're some fucking Robin Hood and I'm some villain. It's such a wild thing. So I guess to come full circle is, like, I don't know if people know what it's like to live in that kind of a war zone, essentially.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I love what you're saying. I feel like I relate to you now on, like, a different level. That's for sure. But yeah, like, everyone always has their own stuff that other people don't necessarily know about that's driving them and that's driving you. And I think as well, what you said, like, yeah, everybody totally has their own stuff going on. And it's just the level in which we choose to share things, I think, can ultimately become very helpful for other people, very helpful for ourselves. Like, I proactively try to share the struggles and the things that I'm actually going through because I think it helps other people. And there are things, yeah, that you can't necessarily share. Like, simultaneously, I have some giant legal fees right now, which was legitimately giving me, like, heart palpitations and, like, really bad anxiety because I hadn't had an experience like that before, you know? And so there are just different, like, levels to problems, right? What's that saying? New level, new devil. And it depends in which area of your life it is. And one thing that one of my mentors actually said to me a few months ago, he was like, Lauren, just look at what you've achieved in the last few years and realize that would be, for most people, stretched out over a 30, 40 year time horizon. So if most people in their life get sued once or twice in business, just know that you're going on, like, 6 to 8 times speed. So just expect it to happen 6 to 8 times more than others. And I was like, oh shit, that's such a great way of framing it. It's like, in your career, if you're leveling up the ranks more quickly, if you're achieving more things more quickly, then you can just expect that the bigger problems are going to happen to you faster. And for example, a legal issue that I have right now, I'm even so grateful that it's happened because over the last 18 months, I have learned literally more than I would have taken 20 years to learn. So now I'm just like, okay, had to spend a lot of money, had to deal with a narcissist, but it's all good because I just got friggin' 20 years of legal business education in 18 months. Thank heavens for that. Like, I'm now never going to make that mistake again or hire that wrong person again. And I put gratitude towards everything because it helps me at least see the positives. Because if you've been dealt like a shit sandwich, right? Or the cards that life has given you, you have to handle it some certain way. So I would rather just live in the mindset, like, I'm so grateful for this, rather than wallowing in what's going on in my life. And that's probably one of the biggest things that my dad always taught me. Like, yeah, my parents kind of brushed off my brother's disability and we never really spoke about it, but it was obviously there. Like, my mom and would go to hospital with him multiple times a week and we never like publicly spoke about it. But the one thing that my dad for sure helped me with was seeing that there's always a positive in everything. And like, if you just pick yourself up, acknowledge, act grateful, and then move on in some certain direction, then you can use it to gather momentum and actually improve your life in some way.
I'm a tad jealous that you had a father who was stoic because I got nothing. And yeah. I had no perspective at all. And I, you know, asked the Lord, I'm like, please keep me around for these children just to get them to the point where they can understand how I'm seeing things and how it's different. And, you know, we're living in a different place than where we came from. And I don't think the conversations are as thoughtful there as I'd like them to be, but they're significantly more thoughtful in a caring sense and a less judgmental sense than where I grew up, which is a very different environment. You know, you're talking about this. I have a friend of mine who's very successful here, and he's a really good friend of mine. He's a great guy. His name's Rob Dukansky. He's been on this website, He's been on the podcast before. And if you ever come to the tri-state area and drive in New Jersey, you will see his billboards everywhere. It'll say Rob sells New Jersey, and he deserves acknowledgement because he's one of the best human beings I've met in my life. And he's just, people don't know how great this guy is, but let me speak on his behalf. But we were having dinner one time, and let me preface this by saying, I'm talking about first world versus third world. So I was telling him all the things that were going on in my life and all the problems I had. And he was actually eating a like disheveled lobster fra diavolo, which was like a 6-pound lobster he was eating too, at this really nice restaurant. I'm sure that meal was $250, right? Which is a lot of money for most people. And I remember him like looking up like with like food in his mouth. He's like, hey, would you rather have rich people problems or poor people problems? And I'm like, fuck, I never thought of it that way, dude. He's like, you tell me. He's like, just think about that. I'm not going to say any more. So you think about it. There are people who can't find water right now. You know, people can't get health care and are dying. And we sit here and what was it? And by the way, I think you should also acknowledge problems. I don't think it should be just brushed to the side, but have some perspective on them and just know that everything's going to be okay at some point. Just keep moving forward and walking forward. I have a cool last question for you. You're going to like it.
Hit me.
Why did you become my friend?
You have great banter. I like your banter. Yeah. And so when I first met you, I was like, wow, what he does is really, really cool. And then you were just really fucking funny. I was like really laughing at everything you were saying. And then I followed you on Instagram and I could just see your personality was just like so genuine. Everything that you do online, same in person, online, same guy. And for me, I'm always trying to find fun in life. Probably like you, like in our childhood, we didn't really have it. And so as soon as I saw the way that you live, I was like, damn, this guy like really has a good amount of fun. Like the way that you raise your kids, I think is just, you have fun with your kids. And I always look to make friends with people who clearly share the same values as me. So freedom, family, health, building a business that you genuinely make an impact and make a difference with. And so I saw those values in you, and that's what made me interested to deepen our relationship and our friendship, because it's just very clear that you're living a life by the values in which you choose to live by. And yeah, for sure, like there's stuff in which is challenging, but I think the mindset that you have behind everything and being able to actually enjoy everything that you're doing despite the hard times, it's just very clear to me. And I liked that personality in which I saw in you when we first met. And then also that I saw online. And yeah, you're just fucking funny. Like I love funny people who have great banter. And you're doing great work as well. And everyone that follows you, I think, is making a really smart move, because the stuff that you're doing is really cool and really, really needed as well. So that's why I wanted to be friends with you.
I think of our friendship, I'm like, if you really think about it, it's very, very interesting. It's very uncommon. What'd you say?
It's quite random as well. It's very random.
It is. But I think we've actually figured out today why we're friends.
Why? That's true. Yeah. I mean, that was never, like, the fact that you have a brother with epilepsy is obviously something that I never knew, but holy shit. Like, I get actually goosebumps everywhere. Like, when I say this out loud, because it just makes sense why I felt like a connection to you when we first met, because I was even saying this on a podcast earlier this morning, like, when you meet somebody else that has a disabled sibling, like, there's just some type of energy about them that like, they're not fucking quitting no matter what. Like, they're gonna, like, make this shit happen. And there's this drive and determination and real, like, just humble feeling and nature, but also lighthearted energy, because you've been through so much shit, you know? Mm-hmm. So then everything else just is like, for God's sake, guys, like, you're complaining about this, this, and this. Like, let's just have some fun. Let's enjoy the journey while we're going through it, because you've seen how bad life can actually really be. And so now it comes down to us to choosing to create the life that we want. And yeah, it makes sense.
You think there's some sadness there too?
What towards?
Like, with having a disabled sibling.
Oh my God. Yeah, of course. Every time I think about my brother, where he's at right now, it makes me really sad. Like, I cry about it and, like, I feel really defeated because there's nothing I can do. And I think for a long time, like, in my childhood, I always just felt hopeless. Like, I wanted to do something about it, but, like, I couldn't. And there were all these other different avenues that you could potentially take for epilepsy, you know, different. For example, my brother was on the ketogenic diet before it was cool in health and fitness. And then, unfortunately, it stopped working so much. So I was always researching to try and find different things that we could do instead of him having to go on, like, tons more medication. But there would be these different solutions. But, like, my mom would just be like, no. My mom and my grandma would always say, like, no, we're going to do exactly what the doctor says. And it's just, like, melting his brain with different pharmaceuticals, right? And that's just something that, like, that's a topic for another day. But ultimately, when I think about, like, my long-term mission is 100% something in the health and, you know, something in health. I don't know what it is yet. I'm trying to figure it out. Over the years, I need to make, like, a lot of money to be able to do what I want to do. And I need to rally the right people. But I want to do something somehow in the world of epilepsy. And also for families with disabled children, because yeah, like, of course there's sadness behind it. And, like, oof. I think that
I actually see kids who have disabled, like, I see younger kids, like, when I see a family out and I see children who have siblings that are disabled, and I just know who you are.
I cry. I literally cry. Like, my boyfriend will, like, if we walk past someone who's got, like, a kid in a wheelchair, like, I literally start crying. And then, like, I try not to look. I literally just try not to look, because I will cry. Like, I will 100% just start crying. And so my boyfriend looks at me and, like, he's like hoping I didn't see them, because otherwise I'm just in tears, you know, because I just feel so sad for them.
Actually, to get over my avoidance of things like that, my problem with it is, like, I see me in that child, but I also now, and I want to, like, encourage people to do this as well, like, it may be uncomfortable to try to interact with a kid like that. And it is uncomfortable because you don't know, you don't want to, like, be insulting. You don't know what the, you know, I think that there is different intelligence levels that you can't read by somebody who may be not well. But certainly acknowledging that they're there. I try to treat these kids like everybody else. So there's a guy who my kids play flag football. I see him. I don't know, because I'm not the father of a child, but I know how his brother feels. His brother plays my son's team. And he's all locked up. He's got cerebral palsy. And yeah, I just come over and, like, just do what I do with every other kid to him. A little high five, a little handshake. Sometimes we bring the dog along. He really enjoys the dog. But I don't try to treat him any differently than any other 7 or 8 year old kid who's out there. And I don't know how much he processes. But I think that's where people need to go with what can you do? Something like that. Don't ignore the kid in the wheelchair because you feel awkward about it. You know, I have, I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
No, I just, I, I, I haven't even begun to scratch the surface of five of the things that I need to go through to understand how I've developed to this. But, you know, even to this day, I still deal with a lot of stuff, and it seems to never go away for me. And so when I asked if you also, some of the emotions with that was sadness, is because you have to think back to your childhood. And same thing, I was being shuffled around doctor. That's how I spent my childhood, going from doctor's office to doctor's office. I missed that. I missed a lot of stuff. So I remember literally last week, my kids wanted to go to, for my son's sixth birthday, we went to a place in East Brunswick, New Jersey, and we drove past an area which I remember going to frequently with my brother. And I, like, it just brought me right back to being in my mother's van, going to the doctors in the summer, right? Feeling that I could actually feel the air conditioning coming out of the vents, the music from that time of my life, early 90s, late 80s. And, just like, it just sucked. Like, it just fucking sucked. It sucked that my life was not like everybody else's.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that so much. Like, literally so much. I was always being like shoved around my grandparents, you know? And then one time, like, getting picked up from random people's parents after school. And I remember, like, my mom and my dad always told me, like, never go home with somebody else's parent, right? Like, because who knows if there's just some weirdos at the school coming to pick you up. So I always took that very seriously. And then my friend's grandma came to pick me up one day, because it turns out my brother had to go in a hospital. I didn't know, because, you know, I was like six, right? And I remember, like, going to the teachers, like, I don't know who she is, like, who is this random person? And they were like trying to call my mom, and my mom had to go on the phone with me to tell me, like, no, Lauren, it's okay, you can go home with her. But I was just so scared. I was like, who is this random person picking me up from school? And it would always happen then when I was like 10 or 12, like, there was this one other friend of mine, actually, unfortunately, my friend's mom recently passed away, but this mom, and she was an alcoholic, she would always pick me and my friend up from school. So I'd be like going around there, and this alcoholic mom of my friend would always be like looking after us. It was just weird. Like, you know, it was just very, I never had that real feeling of family. You know, I never had that. Mm-hmm. And then my parents got divorced when I was like 18. And it just, I just kind of lost any connection to the UK where I grew up, because I just felt like I didn't have any real home there. Right. And so that's kind of, ever since then, I was nomadic, and that's been great for me. But yeah, definitely a feeling of sadness, definitely a feeling of like disappointment in my childhood, which, yeah, I mean, it's, now it's like, I think I get to enjoy things maybe more than other people would, though, because I see the fun in little things right now. So maybe that's good.
You plan on having children at some point in your life? Is that part of your thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to have two or three kids. You have four. That's a little too much for me. I don't know if I could be pregnant four times.
What I can tell you is going to be cool for you is that you can take all this and take that energy and now give it to the next generation. So, you know, their mother and I, we have discussions, and, you know, very, very difficult childhood. She had a very, very hard childhood, very fucked up parents, like, on every level. They're horrendous. And I said, you know, there's one of two ways of looking at this. Like, that happened for us to be the best parents we ever were. And exactly. What would we have been this way for these kids had it been different? True. We don't know.
True. I always, yeah, my boyfriend and I talk about this all the time. Like, yeah, I'm 100% with you. It's like, I'm super convicted that, like, I already know I'm going to be a great mother because of how my childhood was. And how, like, yeah, there were some great things my parents taught me, but like, there was just never that like family unit.
Right.
Feeling.
That's right. That's just exactly right. Really,
and that's something that for both my boyfriend and myself is like super important. I don't want to have kids right here in the next year or so, probably in the next like couple years after that. But, man, it's just, it's so important. And I think that the downsides can show you how to, well, you don't want. It's kind of like when I worked in the corporate world, I knew exactly what I didn't want in a career. I feel like the same thing in my childhood is like, and it's tough because the questions come in my mind, like, what if I had a disabled kid, right? That's a different question. And so that's a really tough thing that I need to try and get my head around.
Because you know what that means,
yeah,
more than anybody.
More than anyone. Exactly.
You know exactly what that means. And that was a big thought of mine as well. And, you know, fortunately I have four very, very healthy children, but there is, and I know people with disabled kids, and I know what they're going through. And I don't think they know that I know what they're going through. I don't say it. I don't announce it.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly. I've done a lot of like processing and various different things. Like, for example, right, I get heart palpitations when I'm like in the thick of it. And it's really scary when I have that because I feel like I'm going to die. And I've had like checks.
It's called a panic attack, just so you know.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but I used to have panic attacks 10 years ago, which were like, and I couldn't breathe. Whereas now it will just be like a heart palpitation. So anyways, I do a lot of like internal thinking and trying to map patterns back to my childhood and stuff. And I was actually listening to this podcast just earlier this week, and it was a Q&A with this manifestation woman. And normally this type of stuff, I'm like, oh, this is BS. Like, let's move on. But I just, for some reason, felt the calling to listen to it. And so the Q&A was like, well, what happens if you get sick? Okay, that's just what the question was. And I guess the topic they were talking about was manifesting money or something. And the woman replied saying, well, to be honest, and people are going to hate me for this. Yes, there's stuff that happens in people's lives. But I think that it's ultimately a cop-out when you get sick, when you're going into that next level of life, because you've reached your energetic threshold of what you can achieve. And so your body is subconsciously shutting you down and slowing you down, preventing you from achieving the goal that you had. And as I listened to this, I was like, I was like, oh my Jesus Christ. Because I remembered back suddenly these memories that I'd forgotten about when I was in school, when I was literally like 5 years old. I would get a sore throat. I would go into the nurse at the school and I would tell them like, I feel really ill. My throat hurts. They would take my temperature. They would phone my mom and I would go home. So I used to be able to leave school early when I was sick, even though I wasn't really sick. I was just a tiny bit sick. And then I remember thinking, shit, when I was 16, I was having all these panic attacks all the time, heart palpitations, couldn't breathe, legit felt like I was dying. I would text my mom. She would come pick me up from school and I would get to go home. And then I was thinking, oh my God, this is so crazy, because I guess that's the way that I would get the attention from my parents that I was lacking, because my brother was always the one that was sick. And then I would get to go home and do the things that I would want to do. And my parents would feel bad because I was actually sick. So then I was thinking, huh, all this stuff that I've been going through lately, like, you know,
you're triggering shit for me. You're fucking me up. And you're fucking me up now.
As you go through this stuff as a business owner, I'm like, I'm reaching this limit that like I've never broken through before. You know, you go through this bullshit stuff. You were talking about your friggin' insurance thing, like similar things with me. I've had some BS stuff recently, like very fucking similar to you. I can't lie, just in a different capacity, like different type of, not an employee, but an agency. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm having to deal with this stuff that I've never dealt with before. I feel fine energetically, but like my body is giving me these symptoms of these heart palpitations, clearly because I want an excuse and a reason why I don't need to address this thing. And I'm like, fuck, this is so amazing. And I finally feel free from being scared of what's going on with my body right now, you know? So it was just incredibly liberating for me when I finally can map these things together. Because for so many years, I was like, no, I'm fine. I'm over it. Like, my brother's disability didn't affect me. I'm really sad that it happened, but like, I'm fine. I'm good. And I would have this kind of attitude, like what my dad would always have. And I phoned him the other day and we were just talking and I was telling him like, yeah, you know, after I had my wisdom teeth out, I was having so many heart palpitations. Like, I'm pretty scared. Like, I don't know what's going on. He was like, oh, Lauren, like I've been having heart palpitations for years too. I was like, wait, what? And I'm just like, oh my God, all this like shit that we just suppress, it comes out somehow. There's this great book called The Body Keeps the Score.
Oh yeah.
And it's quite,
oh yes.
It's quite, yeah, it's quite boring. But like when you read it, it's like, oh my God, I see why I need to actually address this stuff. You know?
Crazy. Well, you got to be careful because it will come out and really bite you in the ass. I want to tell you one thing that you just triggered for me. I remember my brother had so many brain surgeries as a kid. My brother would be hospitalized so much, but every time he would be hospitalized, before or after he got back from the hospital, he would get tons of gifts. And I would be very, very jealous of that. And I just would be like, you know, they would try to explain like, oh, how come he gets all these gifts? Well, you don't know what he's going through. And like, he's, but all I saw was like, I remember specifically him getting like a bag, and inside the bag were like Oreo cookies and like cool toys and all this stuff. And we were getting nothing. We never got anything. So me and my other brother would literally sit there and watch my brother get showered with gifts, and we would get literally zilch. He got all the attention all the time. Not I didn't want to be him, but like when you think about that stuff, you're like, man, you don't realize
Well, that does. Yeah.
You triggered that for me. I haven't thought about that. Since it probably happened. Wild shit. Yo, if I don't get off this podcast, I'm going to pee my pants.
Yes, right? I was thinking that.
So it's 5:34 here. I have to do things. I have to leave Puerto Rico in the morning. My kids are missing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because of you tonight. Just so you know, it's okay. Oh. They don't want to go. No, they don't want. They don't want to go. They don't want to listen. I made them go twice already this week. Believe me, it's like kidnapping children from my truck to get them there. They just don't. They don't, when they're there, they love it. But anyway, more to talk about. This is. I hope people find value in it. Like, I hope this wasn't just a Lauren Dennis self-serving podcast. I don't think it is. We get a lot of good feedback on it. Welcome to our therapeutic session we had today. My mind's a little blown. I'm a tad emotional about this conversation. I can't lie. I'm probably on the cusp of probably getting emotional, even just talking about it. We have more to talk about. And
yeah, we do. We definitely do. Holy shit. Oh my God.
I just want to say that, I think more than ever, I'm thankful you're my friend.
Yeah.
And I want to remove all the business stuff from it, because that's how we met. And that arena has a different feel to it, I think, than genuine friendship. So while it might appear like I have things to gain from you, I am not your friend for that reason. But if there's anything I could ever do, no, but I'm serious. Like, that's that guilt associated with having friends that are successful. Like, I don't want you to think that's why I'm your fucking friend. And my friends that are successful know that about me. And that's why I'm so close with them, because they are so guarded on who they let into their life and to their emotions. And I don't blame them, because I watch it happen to them. And I want to be very clear that I appreciate any advice you want to throw my way. And if I have a question, you're willing to answer it, but that's not why I'm friends with you. And now I know for sure, don't ever misconstrue my friendship with you for something that's self-serving for me, outside of the fact that I just don't want you to think that.
Outside of the fact that it's therapy. Seriously, I appreciate that. And I also resonate with what you're saying, because you know how it is. People are weird, actually. This is a whole different topic that we could talk about another time. People are really weird, the things they do to become your friend when you make some type of success online or in business or whatever. But no, I honestly, this conversation has been very therapeutic for me. So I want to just say thank you so much. And I'm so grateful that you shared that with me about your brother, because I always found it really hard to connect with people on this type of level, because you don't get it unless you've gone through it. You do not understand the feelings and the emotions that come up during these conversations when you start to really think back, because it isn't common to have a childhood a non-childhood. Yeah.
How many people do you know that had a childhood like that? I mean, I don't even know, even in his, obviously they, I don't know how they do it in the UK, but they had these groups of special education kids and disabled children who went through the grades together.
Yeah.
It was rare, but I'll be honest with you. There was this soul when I would meet some other sibling, it was almost like you could look at one another and realize that we were almost like soulless children. There was this darkness that just went along with being the sibling. And I hate to sound like, I actually know one kid I went to high school with. We never connected on that level. His brother's a little bit better than mine, but him and I believe he was also embarrassed too of the situation. I was embarrassed by it a lot. And I think he was too. His same situation. He's the middle child. His older brother is the disabled one. He's a little more, but obviously he's a very embarrassing guy, and we didn't know how to deal with that. Nobody ever taught us what this meant. And so we all had this, it looked like we were soulless children when we got together with these people. These kids were just, even including myself, they were just different. You could just tell that something was wrong. Something wasn't, they just weren't like other, we weren't like other kids. We just weren't.
Yeah. I mean, most of the best entrepreneurs are different. So I'll leave it with that.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to go pee. I'll text you soon. I'm going to go to Puerto Rico. We'll connect and I don't know if we should talk privately or keep doing the podcast like this, just if it's better for everybody to hear it. I don't want to waste anything that's good on just you and I.
Actually true. I think we can do that. We could maybe, let's see the reaction to how people like this, because maybe they hate it, but
no, I don't think so.
Nevertheless, nevertheless, like, holy shit, I'm so grateful that we connected today. Damn. Let's go process.
I'm gonna go pee and process, and then I'll text you in a couple of days, and we'll figure out what we're gonna do with this next one.
Have an amazing trip. That's gonna be fantastic. I think you're gonna have a brilliant time. But yeah, I'm legit gonna pee my pants, so I'm gonna go right
Bye.
Now.
See
you. And I'll WhatsApp you. Yeah, thank you so much. This was so amazing.
I'll see you. It was great.
So grateful.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at streetcop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at streetcop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.